We're heading over now to, I think, a drier place because it's raining heavily here. Heading over to Kevin Adler. He's in San Francisco, California. And we're going to be talking about miracle messages. Good afternoon, Kevin. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Dave. Good afternoon, Dave's listeners.
I was asking you what the weather's like, but you're not actually looked out the window yet, have you?
I've looked out the window. I was joking. I walked outside to throw out the compostable. We do that in San Francisco. It's a nice day.
Fantastic. Well, it's great to have you on because what you're doing is, it's called Miracle Messages, but it really is amazing and miraculous, some of the results that you're having. So tell us a little bit about the organization. How did it all begin?
Sure. So Miracle Messages is a nonprofit. We're working to end homelessness by rebuilding social support systems. And so we help people experiencing homelessness reunite with their long lost family members and friends as a way of reconnecting and getting off the streets. It started a few years ago. My uncle Mark had been on and off the streets for 30 years, but I never looked at him as a homeless man. You know, the identity of seeing someone as defined by what they're lacking in terms of one physical need didn't make sense. I said, this is my uncle, and everyone I walk by is someone's brother or sister, someone's uncle. I could just walk down the street, have a conversation with someone and say, hey, would you like to reconnect with your loved ones? And someone might take me up on that.
Yeah.
And I did just that in San Francisco.
So really, it came from your own family experience and seeing the need there and thinking, you know, if this can happen in our family, it can go beyond our family.
Dave, you know, I've had the good privilege of going to some amazing colleges and universities, but I know if someone defines me as just a Cambridge graduate, it's dehumanizing, right? It's I'm so much more than that as a human being. And we do the same thing with people on the streets. If we define them in terms of their lack of physical housing, there's so much more complexity to the human experience than that.
Yeah.
And so for us, we say everyone is someone, somebody, and we start with the relational networks that make us human.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, because just only a few weeks ago, I was in a town on the coast here, and I was just doing some banking, and I left. I was in a rush because I had a busy day, and there was a bunch of homeless people, and thankfully, they were British, so I could have a chat with them in English, which is better for me. So I just started talking to them, and you know, and the stories come out, and one of them's about to go back into prison, and you can be so rushing on in your day, and you just take a few moments to actually listen to what they've got to say, and maybe buy them a sandwich. And I just found it really eye opening, you know, what was a perception of, well, there's some homeless people. Mm-hmm. Actually, no, there's some people who've got a story to tell.
The key finding that we had when I started out with a project called Homeless GoPro, where I outfitted homeless volunteers with GoPro cameras and invited them to narrate the experience of what they see as people walk by them when they're panhandling.
Yeah.
And the quote I heard over and over again that resonated was, I never realized I was homeless when I lost my housing, only when I lost my family and friends.
Yeah.
And that angle, just, you know, you wouldn't think that. You think, oh, this poor homeless person, oh, they need the house, they need food. Of course. We need the base of Maslow's pyramid to be fully human, but there's a lot more to that. There's a sense of belonging, esteem, love that we all need to be fully human. And that's really what we're focused on at Miracle Messages.
Fantastic. In my other line of work, I heard of a pastor of a church who dressed up as a homeless person. You might have heard this story, and waited outside his church door. And as people were arriving, most people ignored him. And then he walked in and took the service and led the service. And it was just an eye-opener to most people and the way in which... And unfortunately, because of the way things have gone in society, it's understandable why sometimes people don't want to approach strangers on the street.
Sure.
What about you... I'm not sure what the situation is like in America. I can only go on the Europe situation, Spain and the UK. There are some people who are professional out there who are not homeless but look homeless, but they've got a bit of a network behind them. How do you deal and how do you discern between the two, the genuine?
Well, I've always found that there's real strength through shared vulnerability and honesty. I get asked sometimes if I don't know what to say to someone, I'm nervous, I'm afraid, I don't know what to say to this person. Why can't you say, "Hi, I'm Kevin. I have no idea what to say to you. I'm nervous. I'm afraid." Right? Like, you know, we're so used to posturing and curating our best selves on social media that I think there is this benefit by showing a little vulnerability, because I'll be honest, that person on the streets is a lot more afraid of you than you are of them.
Yeah. How do you work out those that are in genuine need and those that really maybe plain, are there anybody that you come across? Because I've come across people who aren't genuinely homeless and actually making a lot of money from being on the streets.
That's for God to decide, right. Not me.
Okay.
And if someone says they're hungry, if someone says they want to reconnect with their loved ones, we take that at face value.
Yeah.
You know, there's situations where it's not appropriate. If you're wanting to reconnect to someone under 18 years of age, if it's primarily an ex-partner, if you can't make an informed consent because you're under an influence of a substance. But, you know, we've recorded at this point nearly 500 messages from people looking for their loved ones. And the vast, vast majority of those messages, when we do deliver them, 90% of the time, the family and the friends are excited to reconnect. So, you know, you look someone in the eye. And fortunately, you know, we talk a lot about technology. We have a pretty good technology built into ourselves of intuition and being able to sense flight or fight, danger or engage. So I think learning to trust ourselves and our perceptions, and if you feel uncomfortable, just disengage, walk away, but ask why you feel uncomfortable.
Yeah. You said that a big percentage of families are interested. I'm sure there are some families who there's a reason why they're not speaking to each other anymore. I'm sure that happens.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's relationships are awful. I have family members in my own family that don't talk to each other. You know, and I've often asked, would this work have been appropriate for my uncle Mark, you know, who lived on and off the streets for 30 years, suffered from schizophrenia? It depends on the day.
Yeah.
But I'd like to think that whether it was a good day or a bad day for Uncle Mark, that any day he would have known a program like this exists for him to take the first step to reconnect to a social support system that loves him and wants to be part of his life.
Do you ever come across people who don't want any help? That's become their life now. That's the way in which they, you know, that's their life.
Dave, do you know the number one reason why people are disconnected from their loved ones?
No.
It's, you know, some people say, well, there's bureaucratic barriers. You know, the shelters can't confirm or deny if someone's there. That's true. Some people say, well, it's the digital literacy. You lose phone numbers. You don't have access to the internet. That's true, too. Number one reason by far is the emotional barriers.
Mm.
Feelings of shame, embarrassment, fear. Yeah. When we ask someone if they want to reconnect to their loved ones and they say yes, but then they change their mind, the most common reason why, they say, I can't. I feel dirty.
Yeah.
And so what we've learned, that, you know, people sometimes are not ready to take that first step. But what we're doing is not just reconnecting the homeless with their loved ones. We're helping us as a neighborhood reconnect with them, because we're just as disconnected from them as they are from their loved ones. So that's the dual focus of Miracle Messages.
There must be a lot of pride to swallow as well when you say, you know, when you ask your family for help. And that you need help. So that must be quite difficult for some people to do.
I've learned a lot about my own tendencies to isolate, to disengage. Because, you know, when we're going through a tough time, you didn't get that promotion, the fellowship interview didn't work out. It's not the moment that we share openly with our friends, that we make a phone call to our best mate. We disengage, we isolate, we get into our own heads, we narrate how awful we are. And that's the exact moment that we need to engage each other as a community, to be vulnerable, to feel like we're connected to the human experience. And so a lot of this is just having conversations and facilitating conversations to make people feel that they're worthy of reconnecting to their loved ones, that they're worthy to feel loved.
Yeah. And What about those who maybe need some help when it comes to addictions and so on? Have you networked with other groups that can help you to help those people as well?
Absolutely, yeah. So, you know, with Miracle Messages, we're hyper-focused on reconnecting people with their loved ones. But in order to do that work well, we know that we need to do two things, which is one, if someone reconnects to their loved ones, provide social support, follow-on care to themselves as well as their families, because sometimes the loved ones, they don't know what to expect. They're just excited to reconnect. What is support services? What kind of harm reduction programs? What kind of alcohol drug treatment programs are needed?
Yeah.
The other piece to this is for folks who want to reconnect to a loved one, but the loved ones don't want to reconnect to them, or we can't find the loved ones, or they don't have any loved ones to reconnect to.
Yeah.
We need to be able to build what we call the social home where they live, the social support, sense of belonging where they live, so that it's not about going back and living with their family again. It's about being more of an interconnected community where they're currently living.
Right. And so that's really important, isn't it? Because a lot of people do get into trouble and they do become dependent on whether it be alcohol or drugs to do that. So what are the local authorities making of what you're doing? I mean, they must be happy with you. And do you get support from those people as well? Because obviously it's making the community a better place if this is what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. The local authorities are usually the first ones who get this work. You know, we have a meeting in a few weeks with the sheriff of San Francisco County. We're looking at doing a pilot with police departments. They're on the front lines. They understand that most of these individuals, when they get in the back of the squad car and they're perhaps, you know, going through a tough time, they get arrested for public loitering, panhandling. They start having conversations and they yeah. hear stories and they know that these people have loved ones that they're disconnected to. And, you know, substance abuse, of course, is an issue on the streets. About a third of people on the streets have some kind of addiction, substance abuse. But a lot of that, first of all, two thirds don't. And the third that does, a lot of that is a self-coping mechanism.
Yeah.
You know, it's very difficult, the chicken and the egg thing of what led to their, you know, experience on the streets. And so what we've learned to do is just to try to see people as people. If they're in a good spot to record a message, then we help facilitate that. If they're not, then we say, you know, maybe next time.
Yeah. And are other states or other cities looking at what you're doing and saying, you know, can you come and set up one in our city or in our state? Is that are you rolling them out in different places or are you just purely focused on where you are at the moment?
No, they better be. Have you been have you seen how big this issue is in the U.S.? Oh my gosh, yeah. It's cities across the country have declared states of emergency,
yeah.
totally unaware of how to solve this problem. Yeah, we've had 600 nonprofit service providers reach out to us and inquire about partnering. We've had over 7,000 volunteers reach out and say, we need this in our community. What does it look like to bring it here? And we're just now starting to talk to innovative, progressive, forward-thinking city officials, government officials about what it would take to bring Miracle Messages to their local municipalities.
Yeah. You can look at other countries and see what they do, and some countries are doing better than others. But what does federal government, state-level government, citywide governments have to do, in your opinion, that they're not doing at the moment?
Build affordable housing?
Yeah.
I mean, we have a nationwide shortage of 7.5 million affordable housing units. To put that into perspective, every state in the union would have to build 150,000 units overnight to meet current demand.
Yeah, and then whatever the projection is going to be in the future as well.
Exactly. So affordable housing is beginning, middle, and end. And then I'd say the relational poverty aspects. You know, we oftentimes ask, why are there so many homeless people?
Yeah.
An interesting question that's not often asked, why aren't there more homeless people? In the United States, 47% of all Americans can't pay a $400 unexpected emergency payment.
Yeah.
More than half of the country is a paycheck away from not being able to pay rent. So what's keeping half of us from falling over the edge into homelessness? It's the family, it's the friends, yeah. it's the church networks, it's the social support systems.
And so charities like yourself.
Exactly. So almost by definition, if someone ends up on the street, they've lost that social home, and that's why it's, or they didn't have it to begin with. That's why it's important to focus on these relational aspects. Ending relational poverty on our streets is going to be important in addition to building affordable housing.
Now, going back about 20 years ago, I nearly moved to California. I was there for a few months, but I nearly moved for a longer period. But yeah. for a British person to get their head around the American medical system and the healthcare system, it was very alien to me. I'm so used to having the NHS in the UK, and we have a great health system here in Spain, which is paid for by taxpayers' money, of course. It seemed to be under Barack Obama moving in the right direction. Is that now going backwards again?
I'll tell you this, that we have a lot of problems in this country right now. And healthcare is one of them. Accessibility, lapses in coverage, high premiums, and people who are eligible for coverage but can't get it because of bureaucratic paperwork issues.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have a full confidence in the ability, not so much of our government, but of people to solve problems. Mm. And yeah, I'd love to. I've spent 2.5 years in the UK. Spain is my dream country. I've never actually been, but I'm saving it for like my honeymoon or something.
Well, you're most welcome. Don't come today,
well,
though. It's
please,
wet.
Don't come today. Well, I lived in Mexico for a year, so I speak Spanish. Yeah. If Spaniards call Mexican Spanish. I do. I don't know if you do.
It's a bit like American English and British English, I think.
So it's sort of a different language.
Yeah.
Then. That's okay. It's a dream place. So, I mean, I think we have a lot. One of the things we can do as Americans that we're not doing right now is learn from others. It turns out we don't have all the answers. And being a shining city on the hill also means bringing in neighbors and others from the local area and saying, hey, what works in your community? A type of progressive federalism where we're learning from local experiments in our country and in other countries about what are the best ideas that we can put forward, kind of a John Stuart Mill marketplace of ideas, and let the best ones rise to the top and become policy.
Well, Kevin, you're doing a fantastic job. I really, really honor you for that. And if anybody wants to find out more about what you're doing, is there anywhere they can go online? Because it might be something that we can tap into, because we do have a homeless issue here in Spain as well, as I mentioned earlier. Anybody wants to find out more, how can they do that?
We have an internet page. Can you believe that? It's miraclemessages.org.
Fantastic.
And also on Facebook, which currently is still a viable company. We'll see what happens after the congressional testimony. But if they go on Facebook, they search for Miracle Messages, they're able to find everything they ever wanted to know about us.
Good stuff. Thank you very much, Kevin, and all the very best with continued success in all that you're doing there to make a difference in people's lives. Kevin Adler on Miracle Messages. Have a great day in San Francisco. Kevin, take care.
Great day. Dios te bendiga.
And by the way, I'd like to come on holiday to San Francisco. So maybe we can arrange that. Thank you very much, Kevin.
Stay with me. I don't want you to be homeless. Stay with me and we'll put you up and we'll do some work.
Brilliant. Thank you, Kevin. All the very best. Take care. Right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.